My name is Hyla, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Pierre will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Pierre. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Sabrina will read the steps.
Hi, my name's Sabrina. I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Katya will read the traditions.
I'm Katya, I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Tonight is anniversary night. The format of the meeting will be a 10-minute speaker will speak on the third tradition, followed by our information break. The main speaker, who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our anniversary celebrants. Our 10-minute speaker is Hannah.
Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm an alcoholic. I was instructed to start with the long form of the tradition. So, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. So, okay. Oh my God. So, I'm really grateful to be here. This is not where I'm most comfortable, but I'm, you know, it's really an honor and a privilege to do service for my home group and to be able to speak about the traditions because I'm a big fan and because I'm a big fan of AA, and I believe that if we didn't have the traditions, we wouldn't have this amazing fellowship. And I, you know, I can forget about having any of the other amazing things I have in my life today if I didn't have these principles keeping us together. So, like all the traditions, this third tradition was, it grew up out of experience. You know, the Big Book was published in 1939, and then the steps and the traditions in the long form weren't really adopted until 1946. So there were a lot of years where it was kind of like they didn't really know what was going on. You know, some of these principles came about because they realized they needed to have them, but really it was a lot of trial and error. You know, there were groups falling apart, people were getting drunk, and there was a lot of fear, which is what they talk about in the essay that Bill writes about the third tradition in the 12 and 12. You know, and basically, I listened to Bill Wilson qualify on the traditions, and he said that, you know, our ego has a lot to do with the formation of all the traditions. And that really doesn't surprise me, because I've taken a thorough inventory and I see what I look like. And because I've identified myself as an alcoholic, and I know that the nature of alcoholism is self-centeredness and ego and, you know, desire for prestige and power, I know that these things can get in the way of me being useful to other people. So that's what happened at a group level. There were a lot of people striving for power and, you know, in the beginning, there were a lot of membership rules. You had to be originally a sponsor was someone who sponsored you, and they had to, you couldn't get in the door unless you were sponsored. You know, and there would be, you'd have to like look through a peephole, and they'd be very concerned about who was coming in. And I, you know, the fellowship was composed of mostly people who were very similar. You know, it was older white men mostly, and they were fearful about allowing other kinds of people in. And it's just hilarious to me, because their main concern was sort of diluting the integrity of like the pure alcoholic, when it's like, really, like, you were a mess, so like, why is my mess not welcome here? And I really encourage you, there's a lot of amazing literature on the traditions, and especially in the 12 and 12, and I just wanted to read a quote out of it because I think it's very funny. And he writes, we were resolved to admit nobody to AA but that hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics. Except for the guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof, they could have no other complications. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. So...
Yes, sir, we'd cater to only pure and respectable alcoholics. Any others would surely destroy us. Besides, if we took in those odd ones, what would decent people say about us? We know this sounds intolerant, but really we were fearful. So, I mean, while it is funny, I totally understand. You know, I totally understand how this kind of delusional thinking, where for some reason they think that everybody's even thinking about them to begin with. I don't know what kind of reputation they think they have, or like, why is everyone thinking so much about AA and like who's in it, which they're not. And you know, this idea that like, okay, now I've got something, I have to really hold on to it. I kind of have to hoard it, and God forbid I allow anyone else to get this amazing gift. And, you know, if I don't take an inventory, I'm at danger of being the same exact way. And, you know, if you search online, you can see a checklist of the traditions to see if you're sort of following these guidelines, if you're using them in your life. And the first question is, in my mind, do I prejudge some new AA members as losers? And yes. And, you know, the main purpose of this tradition is that this amazing fellowship remains open to all those who seek it. It's really not our place to set up any barriers that might get in the way of people grasping onto this life-saving program. You know, there are too many reasons for me to begin with for me to not to want to be here. I don't need you to tell me that I anymore. You know, God forbid there were any guidelines I needed to follow or any bottoms I needed to hit in order for me to get here. You know, I would never have been able to stay. And because I understand the fatal nature of this illness, I must understand that it's my duty now to offer those to all who seek it. And you know, Bill talks about this tradition being about personal freedom. You know, you get to be here if you say you want to be here. If you say you're an alcoholic, you get to be here. If you say you have a desire to stop drinking, you get to be here. And actually, you get to be here tonight, no matter what. But you know, and just as a little plug for recovery, that's the only requirement for membership, but it's certainly not the only requirement for sobriety. And there's a lot of action that needs to be taken if you want to stick around. You know, you can keep coming back as much as you want. And, you know, this is all here for fun and for free, and you're more than welcome to come as much as you want. And if you want to meet, says with two or three of you outside of a meeting, you're Alcoholics Anonymous if you say you are. But in order to stay sober, it's suggested that there are 12 suggestions on how to do that. And so it's just really important for me to remember that this really is a broad highway, and there is room for all of the people that I think that there clearly isn't room for. And it's my obligation, because I've been sort of animated into service by having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, to carry this message to anyone who seeks it, to be there when people walk in the door and are really unsure what alcoholism looks like in their life, you know. And to be able to carry this message as it was given to me. No one said to me, oh, that you're 20 and you're a fallen woman and you're not allowed here. Like, your bottom wasn't low enough. You're not, I was just welcomed, you know, and because of that, it's my duty to do the same. And so if you are new, welcome to this all-inclusive fellowship. And I encourage you to take part in what we're offering here. So, thanks.
And tonight, our main speaker is Cindy.
My name is Cindy Coleman, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Jeff for inviting me to come and share with you. I'm glad to be here. If you're new, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Is somebody pisting me? Okay. Um, I am the most blessed ingrate you will ever meet. I'll give you my sobriety date. It's March 10th of 1977. Yes, I got sober when I was 2. Thank God for the third tradition. I'll give you the stats. That's 33 years. I got sober 2 months before my 16th birthday. That makes me 48 years old. And I'm an Eskimo from San Bernardino. Not a lot of us. And there are none now. It was an awful place to grow up. Hated it. It's smoggy, hot, horrible. And you need to drink if you grow up there. And I needed whiskey long before I found it. And I found it early. I always think about my sponsor is Clancy, and Clancy's sponsor was Chuck. And Chuck used to say, I could not integrate myself into society. And that's the way I felt. I just could not make myself fit. My life was a breeze until I was about 5. When I went to school, all of a sudden I realized I did not look like everybody else. And the self-centeredness that I suffered from was so intense. And I need Southern comfort just to be able to breathe deeply. Now, if you're new, I always try to tell new people when they're working step one that I use lima beans or something like that as an example. Like if I eat a few of them, I don't think about eating more. I'm not going to rob you to go out and get more of them. If I start eating them, I don't have to eat them uncontrollably. But when I drink alcohol, it does something to me that it doesn't do to every drinker. And here's the thing that I find perplexing to this day. Some people react to alcohol like I do to lima beans. They drink some and it does absolutely nothing for them. And I don't know about you, but that breaks my heart. Like that is some depth of sadness I don't want to know about. When I went to school, and you know, all the kids would make fun of me because my eyes are slanted, and I just grew to hate the way that I looked. You know, I'd come home from school and I'd sit on the edge of my bed and kind of stretch my eyes out so they'd become round, and you know, it worked. But I started smoking dope and they just shrunk right back up again. And by the end of the party, you know, everybody looked like me. I'm not a big druggie. I like whiskey. Alcohol just did it for me. You know, drugs, I guess they were popular then. I don't know. I just didn't, you know, they're dangerous. And I only took amphetamines for 2 weeks because someone gave them to me for free. But when you feel like mowing the lawn at 2 o'clock in the morning with fingernail clippers and a flashlight, to me, that's like being sober plus, you know. And I have a hard time with sober. My drinking because I get so distracted so easily. I'm going to start over. Forget where I was. I remember. Yeah, I'm Native. Natives don't drink real well. I don't know if you know any Native drinkers. But it seems to me that we're full-blown alcoholics or we don't drink at all. And that's kind of the way I was. You know, I threw up pretty much every single time I drank. I have any number of humiliating experiences that are enough to keep any normal person from ever drinking again or ever drinking that much. And somehow I have this crazy thinking that this time I'm just not going to lose control like I did last time. And my experience is kind of described in the book too, where, and I was afraid of this for many years into sobriety, I was afraid that I was going to get drunk by accident. Like, how do I just not, you know, pass a shot glass and down it without thinking about it? Because I can choose not to drink, and I drink. So I'm described in the book, I've drank beyond the power of choice. And it says for people who are like that, that I need to quit upon a spiritual basis. And I don't know about you, but I had no relationship with my Creator when I walked in the doors. I did not think that I was going to stay sober. I came out of a 3-day blackout, being shoved in the back of a Chevy Nova, taken to my first meeting. And I sat in the back of that meeting and I was shaking, I was sweating, I was vomiting, and I was dying. And sobriety did not look like an answer. And I don't know about you, but she gets it. Once the alcohol was removed, I was left with everything that drove me to drink in the first place. So sobriety looked like a huge problem. I'm grateful for my home group because it saved my life. Hannah read about them. Her first quote, you know, the losers, the tramps. That's like our dating pool. Of which I have participated. But I like the way you worded it, looking for the bottom of fallen women. Interesting phraseology. Fortunately for me, I came to AA in some relatively surrendered state because alcohol had beaten me completely. I was told my first 2 days sober that I slept in the bathroom with my head up on the toilet bowl or wrapped around the base of it where the floor is nice and cool. I'm described in the doctor's opinion of the Big Book. Because, you know, I did not have a big life before Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not, bring down communities. I did not make people question their religion. I just broke my dad's heart over and over and over. My mother left before I was the age of 3, and he had to raise 3 of us under the age of 5 by himself back in the 60s, which drove him to drink. And Dr. Silkworth says people like you are too heartbreaking. And that's me. That's the kind of drinking I do. Thank you. So one of the times I came out of that blackout, my dad was picking my face up off the toilet bowl and pouring milk or buttermilk down me. And I just, of course, threw it right back up. and looked up at him, and he just had tears coming down his face. And that was the worst day of my life. And I know now, because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the new perspective that we get on things, that that was the best day of my life. Like the book says, I knew at that point that alcohol was my master. So when I got here so young, there weren't a lot of young people when I got sober. And, you know, they grilled me to see if I was legitimate. And then I would have to listen to the, oh, you're so lucky to get here so young, which to me, I'm like, oh, great, I get to sit in the rest meetings the rest of my life. You know, that did not sound thrilling either. So some surrendered state for 6-9 months, maybe my first year, I don't recall how long it was, but somewhere around there my ego woke up and didn't give me peace for a lot of years in AA. I had 9 sponsors in my first 2 years, somewhat reluctant to take direction. I had sponsor number 10 for a couple of years, and then she moved away to Orange County, which is where all the old-timers go in California. And I didn't know what to do, so I asked her sponsor, Clancy, to be my sponsor. And he's my 11th sponsor. He's been my sponsor for almost 29 years, which is a long relationship. And he saved my life. I was absolutely a lunatic when he started sponsoring me. When I was 2 years sober, I finally came back to and committed to my home group. But I was more angry, obnoxious, and hostile than I had ever been at 2 years sober, though I was going to a lot of meetings. I was prime relationship material. And, you know, we started glancing each other from across the room, and I got pregnant. And I had always hated children. I'd hear them cry in restaurants, and I would think, oh, God, why don't they just smack that thing? So I was real nervous as to what kind of mother I would become, and so was everybody who knew me. But something very interesting happened. I fell in love with this baby. Oh, my God, so in love with this child. And now he's, you know, a 6'5", beautiful man who grew up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. His father and I ended up splitting up. And a few years after we did that, he ended up choking on his vomit and died of an overdose when our boy was 10. And he was in and out of these rooms for 21 years. We're so lucky to get here one time. And some of us get to come back over and over. And you know, I look at John, and I don't know what made the difference. I don't know why I'm here and he's not. I'm not a better person by any stretch of the imagination. I have been obsessed with everything on the planet except for what can I do for you. The steps are the only thing I've done in moderation. At 28 years sober, I found out what my purpose in life is. You know, the thing you're always, always searching for. And I found out I'm supposed to love God and help people. Imagine my disappointment. I thought it would be about something big, you know. I just think that's hysterical that God gives us a life where it depends, our life depends upon our constant thought of others and how we might help meet their needs. And we're the most self-centered people, you know, going through the multiverse, you know. Commitments were life-saving. I have not always been the delicate flower that you see before you. And commitment in my group, like your group, means that you belong there. And that's good for people like me, because if I wait till I felt like I belonged, it might never happen. And commitments are a great way to make friends that you perhaps wouldn't otherwise do. And I didn't know how to make friends when I got to AA, and my friends have saved my life. The way you do that is you engage in something that we call a dialogue. That takes two people. And the way you start is you ask somebody how they are and you remember one thing. Sounds easy, but it's not. Then the next time you see them, you ask them how that thing went. And then you do that a few times and you have a dialogue going. And then once you become friends, then you go back to talking about yourself. So... Chuck used to say, this is not a self-help program. This is a selfless program. And I love what he said, because he said, I don't need to boost my self-worth or work on my self-esteem. I don't need to hold a better image of myself. I need to not think about myself. And for people like me, that's exactly what I need. And service has been a huge component, and something that I learned in my home group as well. Carl Jung, who was instrumental in the beginnings of Alcoholics Anonymous, said the one thing that all alcoholics are looking for is unity. And I think that's pretty much it. You know, it's unity. That's what I have been looking for my whole life. Some way that I can belong. And when I'm sober and not in recovery, I don't know how to do it. You know, I tell people when they come over and they read their fifth step and they come over with a notebook full of stuff, the same way I did when I took my inventory, it's like I'm looking at the world through that notebook and looking at people who are looking at me through their notebook. And it's a wonder that two people can ever connect. And yet we come here to Alcoholics Anonymous and something happens in these rooms that allows us to connect in a very deep and profound way that eliminates the necessity for alcohol. That's such a mind-blowing thing for me. I'm on the tail end of my vacation and one of my stops was through Italy, and thank you. It was interesting because this kid that let me stay at his place, I met him in Anchorage AA, he's military based. And he started an English speaking group there. And he was the only one there for a few months. But he held the door open, and, you know, now there's like three people. And I've been to meetings like that. I went to, one of my dreams was to go back to the village where my mom grew up, and I got to do that. It's right below Nome on the coast. And I asked while I was visiting if they had any meetings there, and my Uncle Fred said, yes, but nobody goes. So there's a meeting in Unalakleet. There's just nobody there. And I loved him. I loved that visit. It was so great because, you know, I always thought, oh, what's wrong with me is that I grew up in this cursed society where I don't fit in. You know, I'm half Eskimo. The other half is German and Irish. I felt like there was this constant battle, and I need to be with my people. And I'll tell you something. In the way of living that my people grew up in, I'd have never cut it. Because if you're selfish, they ostracize you. And that's your penalty. Okay, I don't think I would have made it a day. They say people get swept away by the river. Because all it takes is one thought of being somewhere other than where you are. It's taken me years in sobriety to get where I am physically. I'd have been swept away in that river a long time ago. I got to repair a relationship with my mother because of sponsor direction. If you asked me if I wanted a relationship with my mother, I would have said no, and it would have felt like the truth. And our big book talks about that. We're the kind of people that can't differentiate the true from the false. And Clancy made me write her once a month. And I got to make amends to her. And she's in my life in a way that's absolutely spectacular and has been for about 20 years. And she lost custody of us because of her drinking. So as a result of my working the steps, you restored my mother's dignity as a mother. Eric Butterworth, he's not an AA. He said something once. He said, the past does not exist except held by the thoughts in my own mind. And my experience in working the steps is it has freed me from the past. And I created a past in sobriety even. Just absolutely insane. I introduced my son to the Star Wars trilogy, the first one, right around the time that his dad died. And one time we were sitting out in the parking lot, and he said to me, thank you. You know the R2-D2 guy, the trash can looking guy? He has C-3PO, who is fluent in over 6,000 languages. And Dan, my son, said, you know, my dad kind of reminds me of R2-D2. He just didn't have a C-3PO in this world. And that kind of describes my relationship to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I come in here with my bleeps and whistles that don't make sense to anybody. You interpret them and send me back outside with marching orders, and it allows me to integrate, which is the very thing that I was always looking for. I just recently celebrated my birthday for 33 years, and my great discovery is that AA works in a very deep and profound way outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.